Hey, this is Jeremy Roenick, and guess what? You guys are listening to the Jim Bob Show.
Hey, this is Wayne Larrabee, and you're listening to Roar on WGN.
Hey, this is Jim McMahon, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
I had to pop a beer for this one.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Brian Urlacher, and you're listening to the Jim Bob Show.
That's awesome.
Oh,
that's
it. How about one? This is Brian Urlacher. I'm not a bitch.
No.
That's about love that one.
Hey, this is John Gruden.
We went ahead and made a commitment to the Bears and ponied up and got the suite. It's been a big disappointment.
Well, you're a hard guy to please. Don't forget that. You're a hard guy to please.
Yeah, they're 40-1, which is shorter than I thought. You know, it.
Why aren't they 100-1?
Yeah,
you know.
I know.
720 WGN high atop Chicago in the Skyline studio. It's the Jim Bob Show game day edition heard here and on great stations all around the country. And honored to have on the line all-time legendary coach, Hall of Famer, three-time national champion, Super Bowl champion, and bar none, Jim Bob, one of the greatest personalities in the history of sports.
Darn right, there it is, for sure, Dane. Coach, you know, I'm a big fan of yours. I followed you in the 70s and 80s at Oklahoma. Obviously, we played against you when I was at Kansas State with Coach Dickey and Daryl Dickey. Followed you through the 90s when you were with the Cowboys. You've lived one of the wildest rides in football history. And I just want to know, is that, man, talking about you and all your accomplishments and so forth, do you consider yourself today more of the bootlegger's boy, or are you the famed OU Cowboy coach? What's in your heart these days?
You know, I really don't think much about my bootlegger days. My dad being a bootlegger and growing up in that situation in South Arkansas. Now, we didn't make the damn stuff. We didn't have still out in the woods, and all that is your vision of bootlegger would. But, you know, he just bought whiskey and sold it in a dry county in Arkansas. It's a county options they have there. And it was against the law to sell whiskey in that county. And he thought he was saving lives. He was a guy that keeps people from getting killed, driving back on roads at night, late at night from Louisiana, Mississippi, by being able to give them whiskey right there in the county. So that seems
saving lives.
You know,
It was a public service.
He was a public servant. Yeah, what you're talking about?
Yeah.
So that's your dad was a public servant.
But he's saving lives. But that's the way he justified it. But anyway, that's long ago. I don't even think about those days. You know, I did have a great run here at Oklahoma, and I look back on that and think about the people that I did have. I had a lot of great players, and that happened because I was doing the right thing at the right time, and when no one else was doing that. I was recruiting all players at all positions, and I was playing a black quarterback in 1972, and there wasn't a black man recruited by the SEC or the Southwest Conference in those days. And if they did, they only recruited skilled players. I recruited everybody at every position. If you were the best player, I went after you. That's when I was very loaded and talented.
Boy, you had some talent, man. I tell you what, I remember the days, okay? The Joe Washington, Billy Sims, the Selman brothers, you know, Rod Schoat, Keith Jackson, Pruitt, Holloway, and Lott. I mean, you had so much great talent come through your organization back then in the 70s and 80s. I mean, you're noted as being a great recruiter and a great talker, and I want to just step back from those great players. So when you were playing at Arkansas, you've made the comment that you were a better talker about your game than player. Is that true?
Well, I don't know. I'd sit down and I'd take over the conversation, but most of the times I'd think they didn't have anything to tell me. But I've had a lot to tell them, and I don't have a short time to do it, so I had to do it. Back in those experiences when recruiting was important, today it isn't. You got this damn portal, you're buying kids, and you got agents out there you're having to talk to, and it's a different game. The games, I wouldn't coach today. I wouldn't want to attempt to be in the system that they have today. But it's an era I was in is gone and gone forever. You know, when we talk about academics, you're having kids for 5 to 6 years on your squad, and you were trying to get them an education, trying to help them be a productive citizen the next 40, 50, 60 years of living for them and their families. And I spent more time with them off the field than I ever did with them on the field. And you had them for 5 or 6 years, you know, redshirt year and playing and finishing up for a degree. Most of the time my kids were through and 5 years. And so you're around them a lot. You know, if there's a daddy in the home, you knew a sibling there, you know where they lived and where they came from. And you know so much about them. They were one of yours. You recruit them. They're part of your family. And there they are. That you recruit them, you got them for life. And that day is long gone. It is never happening again. And it's a shame because that was so important to them, and it was important to the coaches because that was basically their main job besides winning. You know, they want to win, but at the same time, they want to have great relationships with their players and help them be productive citizens.
Coach, you talk about the relationship with the players and obviously that impact that you had with them, but also the relationship that you have with the state of Oklahoma. Talk a little bit about that. I think in a day like today, you said you wouldn't necessarily want to coach, but I feel your personality, the way that you approach things and share the game, would be totally amplified. So to be as I think famous and identified with success in Oklahoma as you were back in a time when there just wasn't the same kind of media, talk about that, because people think of Oklahoma, they automatically still to this day think about those teams, the championships, the success, and they think about Barry Switzer.
He'd be a star today. He would be an absolute, he would be an internet star. I think he'd be a better recruiting personality today than ever.
And so think about that. It's just so identified with, still to this day, with Oklahoma and the success that happened there.
But what's happening out there in recruiting today? I mean, you're going, players are wanting, the star players are wanting to know how much you're going to pay them to come be a part of your program. They don't ask about the facilities, where that damn school is.
Yeah.
It's not important to them.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be a part of something like that. That's not recruiting.
Yeah.
You're dealing with agents. You're dealing with personalities, and you're dealing with kids that haven't even lived long enough to know what the future is like for them or going to be for them. They're 18, 19, 20 years old, and they have no idea. You know, and they forget that they're supposed to be. What was NCAA all about? It was cap and gown, wasn't education, getting a degree. Hell, no one talks about that anymore. Yeah. That's not the goal. That's not the objective. No, it's NIL. You're destroying minor sports, your Olympic sports, whatever the hell you want to call them. But I know it's the ones getting 1% of the NIL. Yeah, I know that's happening here at Oklahoma because I've asked. I said, well, how much do these teams get? And they've been very successful. They've been winning national championships in gymnastics, softball, all these other sports, and they only get 1% of the
NIL. I know. I've seen. You're right on that, Coach. I agree with you 100%. I got a question for you. I was just down in Oklahoma City this last weekend, and I went to the boxing match at the Old Farmers Market there in OK City, and then we went to the Zoo Amphitheater and saw Teddy Swims. We're working with Teddy Swims on some stuff for one of our companies at El Bandito Yankee Tequila. But you know, you had some of the greatest recruiting classes in the history, and my buddy Dave Ellison down there at Oklahoma City, he goes, you know, I'd like to know what Coach Switzer, you know, the one player you almost landed at OU and missed. Dave was asking me who I thought that might be, and I go, hell, I don't know. I got to ask Coach, who would that player be that you missed out on you really wanted?
Earl Campbell.
Oh, man. Earl Campbell.
Earl Campbell, after I saw him play, I said, first of all, he ought to be arrested for assault and battery after the game.
Isn't that the truth?
He'd break the line of scrimmage, and those poor little defensive backs trying to tackle him, he'd hit them, they'd go whirling up in the stands. He just run through them. But Earl was a man among boys back when he played, and it looked like that in pro ball, too.
Oh, heck yeah, he did.
I saw him, he just gored him. He was a brain of bull.
Yeah.
And I thought we were going to get – he actually wanted to come here, without a doubt. We had so many great black athletes at that time, and he came here and he saw what Oklahoma was like, and he wanted to be a part of it. But his mother worked for the banker that was a Texas graduate, and you know, just things happened that wasn't going to allow me to come here. But Earl, he's the only player I saw that I've ever said that could come out of high school and go right to pro football and be a starter and play right away, and that was Earl Campbell.
Yeah.
I thought Marcus Dupree had the talent and ability to do that, but didn't have the mental capacity to do it.
We talked about that. We got Marcus Dupree coming on later, and I one of the flip side of the question is, you know, you had some great recruiting classes in history. Was there one of the players who you brought in who you felt never got his chance due to injury or life circumstances, and you wish people knew how good he was? Can you name one of those players?
Well, yeah, I name a couple of them, but you wouldn't even know their names, know who they are. They live in Indianapolis, and all I thought were just as good as Joe Washington. And actually, they were in the same class Little Joe was, Robert Lee Stewart, Four City, Arkansas. You never heard of him, never mean him thing to you. But as talent, me knowing talent and recognizing talent and know what they're capable of, I saw enough of him as a freshman to know that he and Joe Washington would have been my halfbacks during my career in the mid-70s. And he was a 210-pound halfback that had great speed and great knee action. He was just a thank you people miss, run through him, and outrun everybody. He was just a stud and a good person. And he had an injury that did not allow him to ever play the game again. He didn't even get to play a freshman. He had to play one game at Oklahoma because of the injury.
Oh, man, but it was a bad knee injury?
Yeah, bad, terrible, and he would never be able to play. But Joe Washington knows it, too. Joe Washington would tell you, and that guy was really good. He was as good as I was. But Little Joe was a good one. No one knows who he is. He's just the fourth player picked in the draft. And Leroy was the first player picked, and Joe was the fourth. And I had a guy named Billy Brooks, the 11th player picked in the draft. And nobody knows who they are, but they were just all starters and pro and great athletes. And they're all accumulated here at Oklahoma, just one right after another. And in 1974, Blue Chip List, when there was a Dallas Times Herald, and they had a confidential poll of Southwest Conference coaches. They would vote them who's the best players in the state. And you had to get at least 5 votes by these coaches to make that list. And there was a list of 19 players made 5 votes or more. And of that 19, we signed 13 of them.
Wow.
And so it just tells you how we rate Texas in the 70s. That was a 1975 class coming out of Texas high school.
I love that quote from you, Coach, where you're like, Texas kids want to win championships too. That's hell, why hell, they hell, come hell. To Oklahoma.
That's why they come here to OU, baby. Coach, we're not going to have any Texas sponsorships after this one.
But that's the truth. I said, they all have opportunity to win championships too. You know, hell.
That's a great line, man.
We were winning championship after another. We won about 9 in a row in the Southwest Conference. I think one school would win one and another school would win one. You know, we were just dominant in the Big 8 Conference. But we were great, too. And Nebraska was great at that time, too.
It was
cool. It always came down to us and Nebraska and both 1 and 2 in the country.
Coach, what I tell you what, in 1982, Daryl Ray Dickey and I, we come by your practice. Daryl and I have a break before we're going to the Independence Bowl, the first bowl game for Kansas State, and you were cool enough to invite us in. You took us into your office and showed me and Daryl around, and I know Jim Dickey was a good friend of yours and Daryl, but you
Kelly coached for me.
Yeah,
Jim coached for me.
Yeah, you're out there coaching up the kids, and you go, and you're getting ready to play Nebraska, and this is then 82, and you were kind of in a mid tier year for you, either undefeated or lost one game. Those were Barry Switzer days, but I think you guys went 8-4 that year. But you go, listen, guys, I'll tell you what, you beat these some bucks here from Nebraska, and I'll bring in the Jackson 5, and all the players go, Cole, we don't want no Jackson 5. We just bring in Michael. We want Michael. And so they were out bugging you. And I'll never forget that. I go, you had such a great relationship with your players. You were probably... I mean, I know you were a player's coach. You know, you had such a great, tight relationship with them. Was there ever one Sooner that you coached that you felt was truly underrated out there and nobody gave him the credit that was due, but was
– yeah, there's a lot of them. But they see that when you're saying for an underrated player, then you're not going to know who in hell they are.
Yeah.
But I know who they are.
Yeah.
Stevie Bryan was one. Ricky Bryan, his brother, was a 5th or 6th player picked in the draft, played for it. 10 years from the Falcons, a down lineman, 6'5", 285. But he was a stand-up linebacker that we put down, played tackle, and he weighed about 245, 250. And he was a little compared to most of them, but he was such a great player, great technique, quickness and speed. He was a stand-up player. He was a 4'6 guy in the 40, but he was a tackle now and down. They can really run and rush the passer and all, but he made a lot of plays. Bo, no one paid any attention to him, and it didn't mean anything.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to search those guys down, and we're going to make sure that they hear these words from you, because I think that's important. But thinking about your Oklahoma career, we're going to move on from that here in a second, but In your era, you dominated. I mean, I look at your coaching record.
We were the winningest team in the 70s. You can check it out.
Absolutely. I know that, man.
By percentage-wise, we were the winners. Alabama had one more game than we did. They won about 113. We won 112, but we lost less.
Your record was, you know, you went 157-29-4, and you didn't have a losing season. And so with that, though, the question I've got for you, in your total dominance, was there one game that you think defines the Sooners under Barry Switzer? What game was it?
Oh, I think probably 1979 here at Billy Sims last year, 1979, Billy Sims' last game at home. They come into town undefeated in Nebraska. They lead the nation defensive against a rush and all that. And I talked to Billy before on Thursday in the kicking game. I went over, sat down beside Billy, and I said, Billy, you got one more left in you? Because the week before, you rushed for 288 yards against Missouri and needed every damn yard of it to beat them. And he looked at me and he smiled and says, I got one more in me. Coach, I saved the best for last. And I looked at him and I said, I hope you're right. The first time Billy Sims touched the ball in the game, he went 67 yards for a touchdown. The first time it was given to him. And he runs through and it was called back. It was called back.
Oh.
And ended up the game. We ended up beating them 17-14. They're undefeated. And we got control of the ball at the end of the game. And Billy's already ripped off about a 60-yard run on them to get the ball down there close. And they knocked them out of bounds about the 5. And actually, we were leading 17-14 then. And I started down in the ball there because there's no time left on the clock. And they didn't have any timeouts. So I got a chance for the crowd to roar and give Billy the appreciation because they announced on the PA, Billy Sims has now rushed for more yards than any player ever has on the Nebraska black shirts. And he had rushed for about 200, it was about 260 yards. And I'm thinking, yeah, he did it, had the 67-yard call back. So he had over 300 yards rushing.
Oh,
back
man.
His last game at Owen Field. And he was a Heisman Trophy winner, first player picked in the draft, NFL Rookie of the Year. You know, he was just
I loved
a superstar.
Him. I loved him, man. I'll tell you what, people ask me, you know, who some of the best running backs that I ever witnessed or played against. And I go, well, I got to put Billy Sims on that list. I got to put Barry Sanders on that list, and I got to put Walter Payton on this.
Sure.
And there's a lot of them. I don't like to name the goats and everything, but Billy Sims absolutely, in my mind, was one of the best running backs. His career cut short in the NFL by serious knee injuries. But man,
he had been one of those backs who rushed for 15,000 yards.
Oh yeah, easily. You know, switching gears here and going to your Cowboys era. You know, not everybody understands the relationship. I mean, you know, you and Jimmy, you know, both you guys were teammates at Arkansas and everything. And right. So, you know, when we start this, going into the Jerry Jones world and everything with the Cowboys, what was it like the first time that you sat down with Jerry and you guys started talking about this possibility? Walk us through that, because I think that's got to be a great story.
Well, here's what happened. You know, I coached Jerry and Jimmy at Arkansas. I didn't play with them. I was on coaching staff. I played in the 50s at Arkansas. I captain Frank's last team. We won his first Southwest Conference championship. We beat Georgia Tech in the Gator Bowl. Frank wanted me to be on his staff. I was going to go to law school. He says, you can go to law school next year if you don't like coaching. I joined the staff, and, of course, my career ended up in coaching. And I was a full-time assistant coach in 1964 when we won the national championship at Arkansas, and that team Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones played on. I knew them both well. All right. In fact, I got Jimmy his first job in coaching. He was at Picayune, Mississippi as a high school coach his first year out of college. He was 0-10 down there and didn't win a damn game. And I told him, I called him, I said, you put Mary Lynn in the car, you get Brent and Chad, his two kids, boys, you get your ass up to Wichita, and Larry Lace will hire you as a defensive line coach because he's the defensive coordinator there. And that's exactly what he did. And he started his career with Larry Lacewell at Wichita, defensive staff there, and mid-60s. Then he got a chance to go on to Pittsburgh with Johnny Majors got the job up there, and Jimmy ended up going up there with him. And So he moved around a little bit, but he'd come back here. I got back at Oklahoma with me and Liceville. I talked to Chuck Fairbanks into hiring him. Fairbanks didn't know who in the hell he was, but I did. So I got him hired here, and he was on the staff here 4 years at Oklahoma with me, Jimmy Johnson. A lot of people don't know that. And I was the head coach, and Jimmy was my assistant coach. And Frank Broyles called him and asked him to come be his defensive coordinator at Arkansas. So he left for that job. So anyway, it's all kind of incestual. We all knew each other, and we all were together for years and all. And then all of a sudden, they got sideways down there for all the reasons. And they didn't have that film, that documentary, didn't have enough time to go through all the things that occurred. But Jimmy and Jerry had a divorce, and he obviously called me, and because he knew me, he trusted me, he knew I'd be loyal, and he thought I could get the job done for him with the players he had there. So I came on down.
You know, you had you inherited a really good roster. We both know that. You got Aikman, yeah, you had Urban, Emmitt. You had to make that team your own.
Everybody inherits a roster.
Yeah, they all do. What was the biggest challenge in getting those guys to buy into you?
Well, I don't think there was really a challenge. As I told them, hey, I came from a winning program. You know what we've accomplished at Oklahoma. I won there. I'm planning to win here and keep it going right here. You're going down the middle of the road here in Dallas.
Absolutely. And I think I remember when those days were happening and people were saying things about it, and I go, I don't know if y'all been paying attention what he did at Oklahoma. What makes you think he's not going to continue success? I mean, I was a big defender of you, and I was so happy for your success, and so forth. In regards to Jerry Jones, and I'm one of the few who actually, I love the Jerry Jones stories. Is Jerry Jones a genius, or is he a madman, or is he a little bit of both?
No, he's a great businessman. Mm-hmm. He went in the NFL and showed those people how to make money. Would you want a 26 sliver of a piece of pie, or would you want the whole damn pie? And that's how Jerry approached things. Jerry didn't join the NFL properties. He came there. They wanted to have Anheuser-Busch. Jerry took Miller Coors. They wanted Coca-Cola. He took Pepsi. So he had the whole pie over here.
Yeah.
And now realizing the rest of the owners got pissed off, but they all of a sudden realized, hey, he is a businessman. He's making a business out of the NFL. Where they're all the rest of those bastards were rich and bought the damn thing as a toy. No, the rest of the guys, they were already wealthy when they bought these teams. You got to think about that. Think about the league. The owners in the league were extremely wealthy people.
Yeah.
They owned the team and gave it over to someone. Here's a checkbook. Go keep the players happy to handle the draft. Da-da-da-da. Jerry went in there, fired everybody. He had a dream of having it. Professional team. Here comes the Cowboys. He pays $140 million. He's in debt. He goes down there and he's losing $1 million a damn week or a month. I forgot what the hell it was. He fired everybody. Well, I knew it was going to happen. Hell, I had guys from Dallas calling me about Jerry, about what's he going to do? And I said, well, I'd start looking for another job if I were you guys, because he's going to keep your ass. He's going to cut every one of you.
He did. Hey, Coach, you talk about the incestual side of you and Jimmy and Jerry and everything, but, you're one of only two coaches, and we'll take Pete Carroll and we'll put the asterisk by Pete, but you're one of two coaches to win a college national championship and a Super Bowl. Does one of those titles mean more to you personally than the other?
No, not really. I had several national championship teams, but I should have had a couple more. I mean, really, just one damn game make the way we played kept us from winning a couple more national championships. But I look back on it, I think it's just all part of it. I place one above the other. I love the players that I coached in Oklahoma. I like the players that coached in Dallas, especially the defensive guys. I got along great with black players. My friendship, they all championed me. They loved me. They knew what kind of guy I was. And so I did well because of that, and had a relationship, personal relationship with a lot of players at Dallas. And I like that. I enjoyed that, man. But we should have won four Super Bowls in a row. And if we hadn't played at San Francisco, we gave them the 21 points in the first 5 minutes of the ball game. Gave it to them. An interception in the first time we had the ball. And they run back 15 yards for a touchdown. Ricky Jackson, the linebacker from outside linebacker, takes it to the house. Next series, we hit Michael on an 18-yard post route. Eric Pope punches it out of his arms, hits the ground and bounce. Merlin Hank picks it up on the rebound and goes 30 yards for a touchdown. Then we kick off to a kid from Miami. He was a return guy. He gets it in the end zone, returns it up to our 32-yard line. He fumbles it there. And they've got the ball for the third time. Our defense has only been on the field three plays. They take a 7-yard play drive and put it in the end zone, and we're down 21-0 in the first 5 minutes. But I'm sitting there looking at this thinking, this is a friggin' horror movie. Me watching this, the winner of this game is going to win the Super Bowl. They're going to beat the hell out of San Diego. And we lose the game. We came back and made it 21-14 in the first half. We had two 80-yard drives after they had us down 21-0. We got back 21-14. Then they hit Jerry Rice with no time left on a fingertip catch going out of the end zone to close out the first half to go back up 14. And we could have won that game. We'd win four Super Bowls in a row. We won the next year.
Yeah,
we were a great team both years.
Isn't it funny that one game, whether it's in your college career or your pro career, I mean, you're talking about world championships, you're talking about national titles, one game.
One place comes down to sometimes. Yeah.
Well, it's about those rivalries. I think on the college side, Nebraska, you mentioned it. If you didn't have them, but then it made it so exciting, of course, rewarding for you and, of course, for the fans. And then on the pro side, you had San Francisco and that rivalry, right? If they didn't exist, you guys would have done so much more with all of that as well. And so think about that, Coach, to be able to take it from the college side and then also win on the Super Bowl side. You know, there are some great college coaches that could never make that transition.
Well, Nick Saban couldn't. Couldn't make the transition from college to pro. He couldn't handle it.
What do you think is maybe that sort of secret sauce, that dynamic that allowed you to be one of those very few?
Well, I inherited good players. I had a owner that didn't bother me, didn't affect me. I have no ego. It didn't bother me that he came around. He came around. They own the team. Who gives it? Well, they walk into the locker room or on the sidelines of the ball game. They weren't in the huddle. They weren't calling plays.
Yeah.
They weren't in their staff rooms figuring out defensive strategy or game plan for offense or defense. They weren't involved in those things, and they didn't set the board in the draft. And Jerry didn't do any of those things. Or, you know, I'd kick his ass out. I'd get your ass out of here.
But
he just wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah.
He bought the team. He was a football guy. He played football.
Yeah.
He played on a national championship team. He this dream. He wanted to have it. He wanted to touch it. He wanted to feel it. He wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And hell out, I had no problem with that. It's his team.
As
far as running it, he didn't have anything to do with
it. Yeah, there's a big misconception about, you know, how much Jerry got involved in your era.
That crap.
Yeah, media. I don't know what.
Those guys, let me tell you something. Most of those guys are writing them stories, about 90% of them are the guys that sat in the back row of your eighth grade PE class and never dressed out. You know what I mean? They never returned a damn kickoff. They never covered one.
Oh, no. Yeah, I know that, baby.
Experts in writing about it.
Right? I hear you, but hey, Coach, I got to tell you something. I didn't even know this about these lawyer and whims of yours, so I got to hear a little bit more about that. Is that, you know, people talk about the misconceptions of Jerry Jones. They talk about the misconceptions of you, but you are going to be a damn lawyer. I got to tell you.
Let me tell you, my family were lawyers. My dad was a bootlegger, but his two brothers were attorneys. His younger brother was an attorney and his older brother was an attorney. He didn't go that route, but he did go to college. He went to the University of Arkansas back in 1925 for a year or two, but he gambled too much and partied too much, like a lot of kids do. That didn't work out for him. But then my brother graduated Dartmouth and graduated Vanderbilt Law School. So my brother was, you know, leaned that way and smart and all. And hell, I came back out of the Army. I served my time. I wish to hell everybody else had to do the same thing the day I had to do, serve 2 years in the service. Men and women, I wish to hell they had to do it. Wish this country would be a hell of a lot better off.
It would be, buddy. I agree with you. I think every young person ought to serve 2 years in the Army.
Hell yes, they should. After that, I came back. I was going to go to law school, too. But Frank taught me, because since I had been a leader and a captain of his team and helped him in recruiting, I busted my ass when I showed kids around. He saw that. And Boy, he wanted me to be a part of it.
Well, you would have been a hell of a lawyer. I know that because you, I mean, honestly, you've always had such an intelligence about the gift for gab. I mean, you've got the gift for gab and you've got a way of articulating. You would have been one hell of a trial attorney.
Like, get a radio show.
You're great on this damn radio show. Let me tell you something. Hey, I got a question for you though, but all of us got regrets. I mean, you know, I got regrets about my own career and so forth, but if you could go back and change one decision in your coaching career, you know, that one decision, what would it be?
Oh my God. I don't think I need to talk about that on the phone here.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I got to tell you. No, I mean, I hear you, but I mean, you know, you've got regrets and then you've got your proudest moments. You know, let's move to that. What was your very most proudest moment of your coaching career? Because you had so many of them.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, one I told the players after the game was over. In 1985, we're playing undefeated Penn State. Penn State was 12-0, and we're playing them in the Orange Bowl. And if we win this game, I will be equal to Bud Wilkinson and what he accomplished. Bud Wilkinson has won 126 games at this point in time in his career. He had already lost 24, and he had 3 national championships. My winning this game, our team winning this game, us winning this game, would made me accomplish the same thing. So after the game, we won, beat them. We won the game. We win the 85 national championship. And after that game, my record was equal to what Bud Wilkinson accomplished at Oklahoma. And so that was obviously a high point for me. I mean, to be able to say, hey, I'm equal to what Bud did here. And, but at my run in back in the 70s, when I had the Selman brothers, and to get this, people out there, I don't know who those guys, well, they might have heard of Leroy, but Leroy was the first player picked in draft, NFL, Outland Award winner, Lombardi Award winner, the first player picked. He's NFL Rookie of the Year. He's in the NFL Hall of Fame. First ballot, when you go in first ballot, you are a stud. That means a lot of guys are on the ballot waiting to get in the Hall of Fame, and they've been nominated, but they have to wait their time. Well, I'm going to tell you, he didn't, because he went right away. And he was a great player. All 3 of them played for me. They were all big, fast, and really smart. They all graduated with honors. And we have won 54 games, only lost 3 and tied 1. But then we had undefeated seasons back-to-back, 2 national championships. And but think about that. They were part of 54-3-1 when I had Selden play here. Yeah. And we were better than the teams we lost to. We lost to a 6-5 team before we beat Michigan in the damn Orange Bowl for the national championship. Yeah. 6-5 team. We beat ourselves.
Is that West Virginia?
We knew that. Damn Kansas.
Oh, Kansas. Nolan Cromwell.
Nolan Cromwell. Yeah. People said, well, it's time to change the offense and all. Hell, the only reason they won is because they were running the wishbone.
Now, Nolan Cromwell ran a wishbone about as good as OU that day.
Yeah, I know it. Yeah. I laugh at people. I got a couple of letters. Well, we need to change offenses now. What, you dumb bastard? You weren't watching what I saw. So the only reason they won the game is they're running the same damn offense.
Oh, I hear you. Hey, Coach, a couple of things. Are you going to join us again here later this season? We'd love to have you back for a bunch of times, man, because you are so good. But I want to make sure that we get a Coach Switzer one-liner. Is that you had so many good one-liners in football history. Do you have a favorite Switzerism that we could close this show off that still makes you laugh today?
I don't know why there's so many of them. I'd have to go back. I need to do a book of them.
Hey, can I be a part of that book? God dang it. I want to be. Let me help write that son of a bitch.
Well, I write, you know, a lot of people. It may be up to me more what I am and it's their own fault. And when I begin to believe it's my fault, I've always had that adage. I'd say that. And then I said, guys, I had good players. I had good coaches. That's the reason I won ball games. And Barry Switzer didn't do it. It was me and a team of people around me, the guys that wash the jocks and socks and the secretaries in the office. And it's all of us. We're all the team to make it happen.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, we're coming down to Oklahoma for the OU-Missouri game. I would love to get you on live again when we come down for that game. You're going to be a part of our show with us. I need a commitment from you.
Yeah,
just
I'll
say,
do that.
All right, brother.
I'm here on the campus. I'm right here. I live right across the street. I live a half mile from the stadium.
Good deal. I'm going to cut. Hey, Marcus Dupree's coming on the show here in a little bit later. Anything you want me to pass on to him? I'm going to have you both on at one time.
Tell him I'm still pissed at him.
I'm going to tell him, buddy. Well, we got him coming on here, and I'm going to tell him that you're still pissed, and we're going to get you guys together, but I'll see you.
I'm still pissed at him.
I'm going to call you later. We're going to get together on that OU game, OU Mizzou game.
Do that.
Thanks, coach.
All right.
Appreciate you.
Care.
Thank you, brother.
Bye.